November 12, 1975. We are interviewing Mrs. Mary Clay Lloyd. Today on interview is Eddie Isaac, Johnson Bell. Starting off, let's see. I would like to know how long you've been studying on these chalk dolls and all that.
How long I've been interested? Well, since my childhood, my great-grandmother, Duchenne Linscomb, L-I-N-C-E-C-U-M, Cole, had played with the Choctaws and lived near them when she was a little girl. And so I would enjoy hearing her talk. And then some of the Choctaws would come to visit her that she had known when she was young, and they would come by where we live in out in the country from Brooksville. And in Macon, town of Macon, we later moved in there, and the Choctaws would come, and so naturally I became interested that way. And then when I was, when I went out to Texas to be librarian at Mary Hardin Baylor College at Belton, Texas, which is a Baptist college for women, then just in mentioning, talking to the botany teacher, Mama mentioned that she had this Uncle Gideon Linscomb, who had been a naturalist, collected plants in Mississippi. So Miss Cap, the teacher, was very much interested that we were related to him because it seemed he was famous in Texas. We didn't know it. In Mississippi, we didn't know he was famous because he moved out there 1848 before my mother was even born. And we knew we had some kin people out there, but we didn't know he'd gotten to be famous. But the Southern Methodist University, a science teacher, had written Linscomb up in botanists of the in the naturalists of the frontier, and so we found out that he was well considered in Texas. And at the time of 1936, when they were celebrating the centennial, they moved his remains from Central Texas, where he had farmed and collected specimen. They moved him to the Fisher State Cemetery in Austin and made a memorandum, you know, markers on his grave about his great work. And he had lived the contemporary with Pushmataha. So in his old age, he wrote this first biography of Pushmataha. And when I was doing my thesis on Gideon Linscomb at Mississippi State University, I read about Pushmataha. That was one of his writings that he did, beside nature writings that he read, that he wrote about Pushmataha. So I began to be interested. And then when we moved from Knoxville County, Mississippi, over to Demopolis, Alabama, when I was a little girl, I played at a place called Gaineswood, which is a beautiful home, and the Pushmataha oak was out in the yard. And so we played out there, and it had tree surgeons come and doctor the tree so it wouldn't die, because they said that was a tree that Pushmataha signed a treaty with the whites, and they're trying to keep it alive. And so that was a special interest that grew up while I was a little girl, and about my grandmother. And then when I went to Texas, finding out that Linscomb was famous. So when I decided I wanted a master's in history, the librarian over there at Mississippi State University said, "I think we have enough material for you to write your thesis on Gideon Linscomb. And I know that you're akin to it." And I said, "Oh, well, that'd be interesting." So I did write my thesis on it. And then all the time I was finding out more about Pushmataha, because he was one of the chief writings. So people in Starkville, after I married Mr. Lloyd and settled there, I graduated, I was named Clay, but I'm married to Starkville, Maine, and settled there, and they heard that I knew a lot about Pushmataha, so I was invited to speak at the Daughters of the American Revolution. And so I'm speaking again. They've got another generation now. Some of them have forgotten my talk. And I've learned a lot more, anyhow, since that was 1953 that I married. And so I'm going to talk to them again in February. And all the time, whenever I see anything about him, well, I read it. Were you here when I told about the music? Then the found at the Ole Miss? The symphony has been done on. And so I made note of that and gave it to the library. That accept that in music. You know, you want to acquire it and learn to do the symphony. And then when I went out to Tulsa this summer to see the Cherokee play, well, I went and I found Peter Perkins' picture in the Gilcrease Museum, which is one of the best museums that we have for the Indian art. Beautiful building, rich man, Indian out there, got oil on his land and gave money to build this museum. And I ran into Mr. Pitchton. He's a guard there. Had a tag on his chest that he was walking around, you know, keep people stealing the pictures or any of the things that were on display. Of course, most of the papers are back in vertical files away from the public. But some things out there need watching, and so he's there, and his people save their letters. And so the Pitchland letters are there. And I had a picture of him. Did you see it over there on tape? And that was his ancestor who lived over here in this area and was a friend of Pushmataha and Linscomb.
Would you tell us some things, about Pushmataha's background, his childhood days, and when he became a chief and all that?
Well, they didn't know much because his parents were gone, the governor, Murray of Oklahoma, was a Chickasaw descendant, and he had an idea that he puts in his little book that Pushmataha's parents must have died in a war, and that some Chickasaws took him over and read him. That's the reason he didn't know about his family. Now that's just Murray's idea, and anyhow, he didn't know much, and he'd tell that story about springing from the oak, which would make a nice tradition, but he didn't seem to know any details about his early life that I have found record of.
What about the, as he grew up,
Well, he began famous as a fighter, and so he would go out to Oklahoma. He wasn't the state of Oklahoma then. He wasn't farmed, but he'd like to go out there to hunt. He went first to hunt and take some friends with him, and they would get in fight with Osages and other Indians out there, and usually they won, but one time, all of his fellow friends got killed, and so that's when he went down to where the Spanish people were and learned to speak Spanish well. He spoke Spanish and French, and had very fine Linscomb talk to him. He said he had one of the finest minds that he'd ever seen, and that he could analyze and make plans, back for the treaties. And then he had a good sense of humor. Did you read the little story I wrote there that asking the white girls of Columbus the first dance they had? He wanted to touch them to see if they were angels, because he hadn't seen a white skinned girl, and he'd been going to the mission school and learning about angels and all, and then the Christian religion. So he asked to touch them, be sure they weren't angels. And then he had about the wives, he thought of anecdotes about that. He was when he was drilling for the War of 1812, he found out the other officers had their wives along with them. And so he sent for his wife, and they would parade up a place they had they liked to show off, parade, walk up and down, exercise, and the different officers of the American Army would show off their wives. And so he sent for his wife so he could parade her there and show off too. And then they about the house bedding, that's one of the famous stories that they tell. He had lost his house that he lived way down. He didn't live up this far. He lived down around Meridian in that area, and maybe on the Mississippi side, maybe on the Alabama side at different times. So he wanted to come up here to around the Columbus area. Something was going to be, some entertainment he wanted to come. So he walked 80 miles. That was just the year before he died, too. I think that walk maybe helped to undermine him, a very long walk back there, not riding at all. He walked 80 miles up there, and so when some of the friends noticed that he was walking, and that he was going to walk back. They said, well, we'll let you have a horse if you promise not to sell it and buy liquor with it. And he said, well, I promise. And so then the next time they saw him, he was walking again. And they said, well, Push, you promised us that you were not going to sell that horse to buy liquor with it. And he said, he's got himself all up real straight. And he said, well, I kept my promise. I hadn't bought liquor with it. He didn't say a thing about not betting it on a ball game.
Could you tell us some things what he did as he was chief during his days?
He went on the boat. Were you in here when I was telling about it? Going by from New Orleans to Baltimore by boat. When Jefferson was president, they were working on a treaty, and they sent him by boat that time. And he enjoyed that trip, and Jefferson interviewed him personally, President Jefferson, and told him that if he ever got in where he needed help, to remember that he was his white father and to call on him. And so when he got back up there this last time when he was going to die, he tried to find the real president. Of course, Jefferson was no longer president. Mm-hmm. And it had changed presidents. And Jackson hadn't gone in. Jackson went in the next year in 1825 and pushed out at Christmas, 1824. So he didn't know the presidents personally like he had known the others. He got that treaty fixed all right. He did it, and then he had the Doakville Treaty. And Linscomb, the man that I wrote my thesis on, he was at that treaty, and he gave a report on it, the conversation that took place there. And that was when he caught Jackson about getting the rivers wrong and the geography of what's now Oklahoma, because it wasn't Oklahoma then. But they were talking about it, and he was trying to swap off some land, this good land in Mississippi, for some push thought wasn't as good in the Oklahoma area that he was familiar with, because he went out there hunting and fighting, and he knew the geography, although he hadn't studied a geography textbook, but he knew it from practical visits to the country. So he called Jackson's bluff right there on that and corrected him. And that's in these history books, that he won victory there. And they won victory there. When the Mississippi white people began to call out to get more land, you know. They didn't want two sets of governments. They said, how are we going to get deeds to land? If the Indians have some of the land they claim and the whites claim the same land, how are we going to know who the land belongs to? That made a confusion for them. And of course, that wasn't fair to the Indians. I'm not taking up for the whites doing it. But that was one of the conflicts that was there, that there's more and more white people coming in and wanting to prove that they own the land. And I've told you about one of my Linscomb ancestors. It's in the courthouse records in Lowndes County. And those Linscombs went there and said, this land has belonged to this particular Indian, called him by name, Redbud, or some such name as that, for all these years, and I know that it belongs to him. But they'd come in, squatters, they called them. They just come in and didn't own land. They hadn't bought it at all, but they just squat on it, try to take it, and so that made it bad for the have two governments, the Indian government, and then they had differences the way they did about the justice. The Indians would go and if somebody killed one of their family or intimates, well, they would go and shoot somebody else in retaliation. And of course, in the American justice system, they were trying to get away from that shooting just in revenge, but to have a trial. And I know I was reading in some of these things just last night about that they knew that the man had killed the other one in self-defense. And in American justice, when they can prove that, they don't have to die if they knew it was self-defense. But this Indian said, no, that's the rule. My people, my tribe, if somebody's shot, then somebody's got to be killed from the other side right away. And they held on to that. That made conflicts, you see, with two kinds of justice. And two people wanted to govern.
Anything to say? What was Jackson's general opinion of Pushmataw? Did he ever say anything about Selfish Pond.
Bad Jackson. Oh, he thought he was the greatest of all the Indians. He would praise him. He was there in Washington and saw that they had the big funeral. Because he was already elected president. When Pushmataha died, used to go in March the 4th was the inaugural day, but he knew that he was going to be president. And he went ahead and had out of the big funeral and came to see him personally at the hotel where he was sick. Saw that he had a nurse and he had a doctor's attention and all. But by that time, it was too late.
Can you quote Jackson on anything he ever said about Pushmataha?
Can
you quote Jackson on anything he ever said about Pushmataha? Is there a quote about anything? You know, did he ever say anything about him that was like, he's my friend?
I quite understand.
Well, did he ever say like, Pushmataha is my best Indian friend or something like this? Can you quote him on anything that he said?
Well, I can find you over there in my books. I can't think offhand of a quote, but I can just find you in the books. You come in.